You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Nobody move, there's blood on the floor.
What is up, everybody? This is Matthew Robertson, staff writer at Lookout Landing, back for another episode of our Why I'm a Mariners Fan series. And today I'm joined by the two most powerful siblings in the Seattle podcast game, none other than Kevin Pelton and Tristan Caracino of the fabulous Pelton cast. Fellas, how we doing tonight?
Doing well. I'm trying to think of who our competition is here.
I thought you were going to say the most powerful siblings in Seattle, and I thought that Shaquem and Shaquille Griffin would have something to take up with that. In the Seattle podcast game, though, undisputed.
We're taking that ground.
Well, I think you accidentally just gave the Griffin twins an idea of how to become even more powerful. If they just do one podcast episode, I think they might have you beat, unfortunately, just off their clout from being on the Seahawks.
They stand a good chance of beating us pretty quickly.
Yes, but we will edit that out so that no one can steal your mantle from you. Thank you for taking the time to join me, guys. I know this is right in the middle. This is right in the middle of Seahawks and NBA season, but there's always time to sink into the depths of Mariner fandom and think a little too hard about how we got to these points in our life. And ask the most important question, which is, why do we still do this? Why are we subjecting ourselves to abject sadness every year? I do want to pull the curtain back for a second here and let the listeners inside the podcast factory, if you will. When I reached out to you about doing this and mentioned, you know, the concept of the series and that we're talking to people about how their Mariner fan life has born and evolved and endured, you said, "I wouldn't say that my fandom has endured." So this, of course, implies that it was there at one point and now it's gone. So let's hop into the time machine real quick, go back into the Kevin and Tristan childhood experience. I guess the basic question is, where did y'all grow up and how did you initially become fans of the Seattle Mariners?
So as Pelton Cast listeners will know, we grew up in Boulevard Park, which is just south of the city of Seattle. Probably about, you know, back in those days with the traffic, a 15-minute drive from the Kingdome. And starting our Mariners fandom, I would say, started in 93. So, you know, Lupinella's first year, the kind of beginning of a new era, a new logo, everything like that. And, you know, good time to jump on a little bit before they started to actually become successful on the field, although they were much less terrible than they had been up to that point.
Yeah, that timeline seems about right. I mean, the 90s in Seattle were a very fun place to pay attention to sports. Like, you look at Husky football being one of the biggest programs in the entire nation and having big names like Steve Entman was like a national figure, right? The half jersey is iconic. And then you have with the Sonics, two of the most iconic basketball players that have ever played in the city of Seattle or even in the NBA in general, right? Like, people still revere Kemp and Payton together. And then for the Mariners, having who might be the greatest athlete to have ever played in the city of Seattle at any sport ever on that team at that time, and who also...
You mean Rich Amaral, right?
Yes. And that man's name was Alex Diaz. And the Ken Griffey Jr. was not only the most exciting athlete that I feel like we'd ever seen at that time, He was also top 10 coolest person on the planet.
Undoubtedly.
Like, Ken Griffey Jr. transcended anything of what we could imagine a baseball player would look like right now, as far as, like, name recognition, coolness. People around the country were Mariners fans. He wore a hat backwards, and that was the coolest shit we'd ever seen on Earth.
National TV ads for Nike.
Presidential campaign in 1996 with a moose as his running mate. Not sure what party he was running in. But it was like... It was easy to be a Mariners fan in those days, and to come up, like, it was hard not to get sort of transfixed even before the team was good, just based upon the star power. And then the hitting, too, right? Like, having Griffey, Buehner, Blowers.
That's the list you had.
Edgar, Tino, Russell Davis.
Eventually A-Rod.
Yeah, a guy eventually named Alex A-Rod. Rodriguez. It's crazy that there's, like, at one point, they had two of what I think would become maybe like a top eight hitter. Like, Griffey and A-Rod are both unquestionably one of the best baseball players of all time. And they had both of them, like, right as the Mariners were becoming a national thing. And then within, what, 4 years, I guess, after that, it's just gone in a poof. So I'm curious, like, what that does for young people who are becoming so enthralled by it. And then to have, I guess, the rug pulled out from underneath you. Is that what starts the losing your fandom?
Well, okay. Because I've been thinking about this. I guess first off, I want to say, on the topic of fandom, yes, another thing which was very important for developing fandom, and that is Ken Griffey Jr. presents Major League Baseball for Super Nintendo.
Okay, wait, let me stop you real quick here, because I'm a little younger than you guys, so I've discovered this game later, like, way after the fact, and it's hilarious. Like, obviously, I get it. Like, it was a big cultural thing at the time, but playing it in, like, 2012 or whenever, when I first found it, I was like, this is awful. Like, it's so funny that it became so important to people, and I'm not trying to shit on it, obviously. It's just part of the times. Like, in the mid-90s, it was, you know, cutting-edge technology. But now, like, when I played it, I was like, it's so funny that this is, like, a huge...
Okay, are you sure you weren't playing Ken Griffey Jr. Presents Major League Baseball 2? Because that game was bad. The original one holds up right now. I have a 7-year-old child who literally plays it 3 times a week.
Okay, I'm not going to remember the specifics. It was in a dorm room on a Nintendo 64, so whatever one that is. I don't know. You guys might know better than I do, but it was like...
Oh, see, that was the wrong game. You were not playing the right game.
Okay, well then...
Because this was only made for Super Nintendo.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
I don't feel like I've ever played the Nintendo 64 version.
No, no, no. We just know that it's bad. This was... Okay, so I don't know how much baseball video games you've played.
Quite a lot. Baseball video games in general.
And maybe you don't agree with this, because obviously you care a lot more about baseball than we do. Baseball video games in general are bad.
Yeah,
baseball video games for the Super Nintendo are excellent. we had sure. Griffey Baseball, which I swear to God, like, the iconic video games that have ever existed at the time we're coming out around here, right? We have Super Mario World. We have Yoshi's Island. We have Mario All-Stars, which has Mario 3 on it. The game that we played the most, excluding nobody, growing up, was definitely Griffey Baseball. We would play sometimes full 162 game seasons.
It seemed reasonable at the time.
You have long, long summers and you can sit around all day, play Griffey Baseball, and then watch those players after that. And another thing that
also there wasn't the internet. There wasn't that much else in terms of alternative entertainment. It was either that or watch reruns of Boy Meets World.
The Boy Meets World hadn't even really started yet. We were watching reruns of Growing Pains.
Wonder Years.
So the other thing about Griffey Baseball, which hopefully people who are listening have played this game before, is this was a subtle thing which was very important. The rosters were editable. So you could change the rosters, even though it was set to the 1993 rosters. You could be playing in 1998 and put in the players from those teams at that time, which was very important. The other thing is the pre-programmed names in the game are also fun to dive into. You have teams that are based off, like, classic New York and LA punk music. Like, they go pretty deep with the cultural references on the pre-programmed Griffey Baseball names. This is why you become a baseball fan.
Sure. Wow. I mean, your passion is really palpable for this game. I mean, I understand the sort of the draw of it, and obviously it being Ken Griffey's game in Seattle seems massive. And I totally understand the thing of like video games helping you actually like the real life product, because I had that with the MVP baseball series. That was kind of my childhood, where the summer you'd play for 5 straight hours and then the actual Mariners would be on and you'd recognize the players on the other team because of what they did in the video game. So I'd be yelling at the screen at like 9 years old, like, he can't hit curveballs low and away, because that's what I learned in a video game. Meanwhile, none of that is actually fact-based at all, and no one should be taking advice from Matthew Robertson yelling at his TV in Sammamish. But that's kind of how you learn, right? Like, you have to learn things and unlearn things as you develop sports fandom.
I would say that those are sort of like the early elemental factors, right, of becoming a baseball fan. The team was just so likable, right? Like, across the board, Lou Piniella was this fiery manager who at any time...
Can we say Randy Johnson's name at some point during this
podcast? Okay, fine. Randy Johnson was an exciting pitcher to watch. But also, like, we're at these games, you've got John Marzano punching Paul O'Neill. Like, that shit doesn't happen anymore.
Wow, you really back in my day, 1996. Well done. you are so old right now.
So at this point in the mid-90s, during the good years, are you guys like watching all 9 innings? Like, how often are you actually sitting down and like really diving into Mariners baseball?
I mean, during the summer, pretty much every night. I mean, the one thing I remember about like 93, the first season, was there was a lot of, I would be either watching like the ESPN doubleheader or playing, I guess not in 93 Griffey baseball, but maybe something else on Super Nintendo and listening to the games, because there was a point where they weren't all televised in Seattle, which seems crazy that that happened within my lifetime that I can remember now. But yeah, I mean, and I don't know, we probably went to 15 to 20 games a season. Is that a fair estimate when they were in the kingdom? Mm-hmm. So definitely a very regular basis.
I feel like we were paying attention to basically every single game, like watching or listening to or engaging with in some way every single game that we could.
Yeah, unless you had something specific else going on. Again, there wasn't else that much else going on.
Yeah, our social lives weren't that active around 93, 94, 95.
You say that as if they are now.
Yeah, so I mean, your day when you're a kid is you wake up, and if you're a kid in the mid-90s, you wake up at 9, 10 a.m. or whatever over the summer. You watch about 3 hours of TV shows from like the previous decade. You've got your Growing Pains, your Wonder Years. You know, you've got a full day with that. Then there's a chunk of time in the afternoon. You turn on the Braves, of course. And then after that, you've got some time to play Griffey baseball, which leads you naturally into eating like a shit ton of double stick popsicles. And then boom, the Mariners game is on. Do that into the night. Play a little bit more Griffey baseball after that to like 11. And then you're up.
You forgot going to play baseball in the backyard. I mean, it helped that we had a giant backyard. But, you know, that's an element of it, too.
Yeah, that's very key. I feel like everyone, or at least, I don't want to say everyone, but a lot of people are living the same lives. We're just changing the years up. Like, I can relate to most of that, but the TV shows are different and the video games are different. And the baseball I'm actually watching on TV is much, much worse.
Right.
So I'm jealous of the fact that you had the transcendent superstar of Griffey to really jumpstart everything, plus the video game, plus the Mariners actually being in the playoffs. Like, do you think that if the Mariners had been bad at that time, that would have kind of, like, soured baseball for you?
Probably not. I mean, I got into the Seahawks around the same time, and they were bad at that point. They didn't make the playoffs until 99. You know, I started following them about the same point, and it was a solid 6 seasons of not making the playoffs, although they were competitive in some of those years under Dennis Erickson. And the 94 team, of course, was a pretty substantial disappointment, and that was, you know, one of those formative years. And then they had a strike and missed the end of the season, and that didn't affect things. So,
well, I think that even affected things positively in some ways, because then we listened to the game that sports radio had where they played a fake World Series.
Yeah, that was a great feature last year that Jason Jenks did on The Athletic on digging up that broadcast and writing about it.
The fake World Series. I remember, like, obviously the Mariners were going to win in this Game 7 of the fake World Series, but it was like, I remember being on the edge of my seat listening to this.
I personally prefer the 91 Sports, or 92, I guess, Sports Illustrated story where the Huskies beat Miami in a mythical national championship game for the 91 national championship game, but that's a close second.
The most important question is, you are younger than us and became a baseball fan?
Yeah, so I was born in 95. I actually have this running joke that my arrival on Earth saved the Seattle Mariners franchise because I was born during the 95 season at a time when I think they're like three games under 500. Griffey still has the broken wrist. I'm born. I literally enter the world, and then the Mariners turn it all around, make the playoffs, beat the Yankees, stay in Seattle, blah, blah, blah. So that's kind of my like immediate origin story. The first team I remember is 2001. So that is also very, I think, critical in my sort of fandom beginning because I was lucky enough to have not the same level of Griffey, obviously, but have the superstar in Ichiro, have some other exciting players. While it's a much different brand of baseball, you still have Boone and Edgar and Olerud, and you know, I loved Kazuhiro Sasaki and Freddy Garcia and players who aren't, you know, they don't have the national cachet, but they were still good enough and felt important enough that I was drawn to it. But then what really, I think, what splinters people my age is those years afterwards where the Mariners don't have the fun element anymore. I think it's honestly very similar to what I would imagine kids are doing right now with the Seahawks. I mean, Tristan, I know you have actual children. Maybe you can talk to this, but it seems like the Seahawks are so ubiquitous now in Seattle, kind of like what the Mariners were in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I'm really curious, like, once Russell Wilson retires or if he goes to another team or whatever, if people are going to have that lull period, kind of like what the, I would say, 2005 to 2012 era was for the Mariners. Are your kids Seahawks fans, or are they, like, what is their approach to sports right now?
They're Seahawks fans. I mean, there's only really one of them who's old enough to pay attention. The middle one is maybe old enough, but he has no interest in sports whatsoever. But they're definitely Seahawks fans, and
but I think it's an element of, like, whatever's in season, they're just going to be fans of.
Yeah, I mean, they're bigger Mariners fans in some ways than I am. Actually, in every way than I am, the oldest one.
Definitely a bigger hockey fan, too.
Oh, God.
So, wait, who's the kid who's into the Mariners? What is, like, who's their favorite player? Like, what is there for them to latch onto right now? Because I'm fascinated by the idea of a kid, like, choosing the Mariners right now.
I don't think for children that there is anything to sort of like grasp onto as a specific player. A lot of his Mariners references would be from like 2 years behind. So like next year he'll be talking about this year's Mariners or whatever and getting like kind of updated with it. He'll be like, oh, where's Nelson Cruz or whatever? And I'm like, yeah, he's not on the team anymore.
It's actually funnier with your two-year-old who will soon be three. I was pitching to him in the backyard at some point early in the football season, and some of the hitters who appeared included Ken Griffey Jr., DK Metcalf, and there was some player for another baseball player for another team. I don't
DK
know. It's
Metcalf
a very random
swings a big stick.
Very random collection. But I think they're not quite probably at the point yet where it's like logically trying to figure out whether these players are good or fun. It's just like, hey, this is something that's on TV and I'm generally interested in like doing myself.
Playing the sport definitely helps. I think that's the biggest part of it. But I will say that my oldest child, the sport that he's best at is baseball by a pretty significant margin. Would you agree with this?
Probably, yeah.
And he refuses to play baseball next year. He's like, I absolutely will not play baseball. He thinks he's good at football, even though he's terrible at football. He's one of the slowest children I've ever seen, which is shocking because both me and my wife are quite fast.
Are you quite fast?
At basketball, he has like can barely dribble, can't really shoot very well. Again, extremely unathletic. And he was talking about who he was most like as NBA comps. And he was like, yeah, probably like Steph Curry or Kyrie Irving. And I was like, those are players. But he's the best at baseball, but still it's just like pulling teeth trying to get him to play baseball. Now, I will say that children's baseball is a pretty tough sport because he played in kid pitch baseball for the first time this year. And he was beaned multiple times to the point of tears. So maybe once the kids are not hitting him with baseballs as much, he might be more into it.
I gotta say, getting hit by pitches was my strength as a baseball player.
You were in like high school.
That's useful, though. I mean, Kevin, you were doing the get on base before it was cool. Like, by any means possible, if you can get on base, that's the same thing as hitting a single. So, in a lot of ways, I think you deserve credit for that approach.
Yeah, he invented Moneyball.
But I definitely had the playing baseball element was huge for me as well. I played for pretty much my entire childhood, and I do think that had that not happened, or had my dad not been as into baseball, because he was the one who was coaching me and sort of, I guess, pushing me a little bit towards the sport, I do think that it's a lot harder to, I think, naturally gravitate to baseball as much as it is the other sports. And maybe that's just me thinking about the now, like in the 90s and the early 2000s, a little different, but I don't see the same.
Yeah, it is interesting because our parents weren't really into baseball at all.
Oh, really? Did they have other sports that they were into, or was it like not a sports family until you guys showed up?
Our dad was diehard Husky football, was a season ticket holder. So that was definitely like our first sport that we paid attention to because of that. And then our mom wasn't really a sports fan until we started becoming it, but then got very into basketball and we got season tickets to the Sonics. But she still did not enjoy going to baseball games nearly as much.
Interesting. Okay, so then I guess the next natural question is, at what point for both of you does apathy start to set in? Or was there like a moment, an event that caused it? Or is it just a gradual decline sort of as the team struggles to contend? When did you stop caring so much about the Mariners? Is it just age, or what was the main factor here, you think?
I would say it was really gradual. I think probably you mentioned this early on, like losing all of these, other than Edgar with that notable exception, but all of these charismatic stars from those mid-90s team was definitely a factor of it. So like the 99 season after the 90 or the 2000 season after Griffey was traded, like was probably less into it, even though the team was good at that point. And then somewhat maybe even less in 2001, despite the fact that the team was amazing at that point, just because of the fact that it didn't feel as much like my Mariners teams anymore. I would say for me, starting to write about basketball was a pretty substantial factor in it. Part of probably like when I was in high school, baseball had actually surpassed basketball because I was awfully busy with schoolwork during the year, starting very early in the morning, everything like that. And then during the summer, as Tristan outlined earlier, had nothing going on.
Your exact day.
So it was much easier to pay attention to baseball at that point than basketball. Then college, it was a much more manageable workload for me in terms of the academic part of it. So then it became a lot easier to cover follow the Sonics. And I started writing about them and eventually worked for them. And, that kind of crowded out the Mariners to an extent. But it was gradual over time. I would say for a long period of time, what was interesting is I probably followed baseball more as kind of like an academic exercise than the actual like day-to-day sport. Like I was very interested in the statistical analysis aspect because I was applying that in basketball. And, I was still reading the online coverage of the Mariners, USS Mariner at that point, but not necessarily watching the games.
Huh, okay. I think that still is around, I think. I think there's a growing, with the internet, there's a growing subset of fans who are following along without actually, like, subjecting themselves to 9 innings every night, which I'm kind of jealous of because I think that is a pretty healthy way to just watch baseball. Not even the Mariners, but like 162 games, 9 innings for all of them. Like that just wears on anyone. So I think that was a good actually plan, even if it wasn't intentional, to sort of like slowly like lower the boil down to a simmer and then probably eventually just kind of turn it off. Like that seems like a smart move.
I so disagree with that from paying attention to baseball, though, because like I want to talk about the story of not being a Mariners fan in a second, but I feel like the thing that baseball has going for it as opposed to other sports is the churn, where it's like, you know, that on any given night, let's say that it's like 9 o'clock on whatever, June 23rd or something, and you're like, well, there's nothing else to do right now, I'll just turn on a fucking baseball game, right? And it is there for you. Like, I actually don't pay attention to the Mariners actively in any way, but it's like, would prefer them to be at home, or at least on the West Coast, because then if you're like, well, I need to turn on something, baseball's right there. And so it's just like, you don't even need to really, like, engage with it. You just be like, oh, there's a thing happening.
I mean, you're right in that the churn exists and like everything you said is true, but I think this is actually kind of an interesting like Rorschach test in that like the churn can be like a very comforting positive thing for some people, or it can be, I think I fall more in this category, like a, oh my God, baseball is still happening. And like now that I am in a position where I'm not complaining about this, but like where I have to sort of pay attention and cover the team, then it becomes like, oh my God, we have 100 more of these and I'm already starting to hate it. Like it's, I think kind of like a, it's a good way to see, like, are you a naturally positive person or are you a naturally negative person? Because for me, the churn becomes, like, very daunting and not, like, a, the specter of another day tomorrow isn't always the most happy feeling. You know what I mean?
The problem is that you care too much.
Right. The level of investment.
Like, if you're just watching a couple of innings of a baseball game every 3 days or whatever, it's kind of just white noise. Here's a comparison.
And you're like, oh, the Mariners lost. Huh? How
yeah,
about that?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I don't know who played well, who didn't play well, whether they lost or not. Doesn't really matter. But the Mariners are like The Office on Netflix, which I know it's going away, unfortunately. But it's like, whenever you need something just to be on in the background, The Office on Netflix is there, and there are so many seasons, and all of them are like pretty high quality. There are some that are better than others, but you know that it's there for you. It is a rock, and that's what baseball is.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I think it's also, I'm realizing now as we're talking this out that like I kind of have this approach now with the NBA where I'm not invested in the actual outcomes. And it's just like the thing you said, but flip it to like, oh, it's, you know, a Wednesday night in January. I have nothing going on. There's at least one NBA game on. I don't have to really pay attention. Like if it's a 20-point blowout, then I can just sort of be on my phone or do other things. But if it is a good game, then I can choose to sink my teeth into it if I want to. So it's kind of like that knowing that you have the option to either go really hard or stay hands off. And I don't really have that as much with the Mariners, I guess, since I joined Lookout Landing and just generally caring about the Mariners more than I cared about other things. But with the NBA now, being at that sort of agnostic point has been very freeing for me.
Sports is almost always better than not sports.
That is true. That's a good motto, I think, for all of us. Especially, I mean, we had to confront that when the Sonics left, too, I guess. Like, we watched this happen in real life. Like, even when the Sonics were struggling down the stretch, and the last year was one of the sadder things I can remember in Seattle sports, it was still like, they're here. And then the next season, when they're gone, you're like, oh, I get it now. I get why this was such an important thing for the city.
I so badly want the Sonics to again screw up the draft and draft take a terrible project center.
Yes, they could just draft Mohamed Sene again.
Well, nothing more.
But sorry, to just keep going on that point because I was getting down an interesting train of thought here. I'm curious how, like, with the Mariners, obviously they have the churn, they're still here, and yet, like, your attention level, your investment, whatever you want to call it, starts to fade. But this is the same city that literally lost a team, and like you still, like, I feel like, and for a lot of people that would, like, losing the Sonics would make some people go, oh, okay, I guess now I have more capacity to do other things, like to cheer for the Mariners a little more, or to, you know what I mean, like to redistribute some of that Sonicness. But it seems like once the Sonics left, and then I guess you guys are in a different point in your life. You know, Kevin, you're following the NBA a little more. Tristan, you're starting to maybe have a family. I don't know what the math is on that. But it seems to me that, like, that would have been a natural time to be like, okay, let's get back into the Mariners a little bit. But it sounds like you didn't really do that.
I guess that's more for you, because for me, because of the fact that I was covering the NBA, like the Sonics moving, that just moved from focusing on them specifically to the league as a whole and watching league passes every night. So it definitely was not any additional time. And then, like, as my career has progressed, way less time. So.
Okay. Interesting.
I think I just don't like baseball that much. Like, the idea, like what you're talking about of, like, oh God, there's so much more baseball to come. Like, feeling that way, if I was paying that much attention, you know, like, you can kind of get caught up in it for a couple days or whatever and leave it alone. It's like, that's fine. That's the exact amount that I want to engage with any baseball. It's like, oh, I'll watch a playoff game, right? If there's like a thrilling game 7 between the Dodgers and the Astros, I'm like, I'll watch that. I'm familiar with the sport of baseball. I know who Walker Buehler is. But like,
I know enough to root against the Astros.
Yes. But it's just like, in anything more than that, in any sort of like active basis, you have to sort of confront the fact that baseball is incredibly boring.
And I think that's a key point here, is we have this conversation, is I mentioned to someone like over the weekend who, you know, I had not talked to about with baseball that much, that I was coming on this podcast and was talking about how I stopped being a Mariners fan instead of continuing to be a Mariners fan. He was like, but you didn't become a fan of anyone else, did you? And it's like, no, definitely not. It's just a lack of investment in the sport in general rather than a specific team.
Yeah, sports has that like very specific loyalty where people will start to like side-eye you if you mention that, even if it's totally reasonable. Like, people are going to get mad at this, but I would totally understand someone being like, you know what, I don't want to root for the Mariners anymore. Let me pick another team and I'll do that. I think it's easier too in baseball. Like, if someone were to come to me and be like, hey, I'm just done with the Mariners, I'd be like, okay, I get it. And then if they were like, I want to pick a National League team, I would say that's a very logical way to go about it. So you don't have that direct rooting interest come back. You don't have to make the weird decision of like, when they play the Mariners, who do I root for, blah, blah, blah. So I totally get that. But I feel like with the Mariners, the thing that makes them so weirdly lovable and so like I want to latch onto this is that specter of like when they do finally break through and get to the playoffs, it's going to be so sweet, you know. And like, I'm kind of wondering how you guys feel about this as people who have admitted to sort of letting go a little bit. Like, when the playoffs do come around, whether it's 2 years from now or 200 years from now, like, do you feel like that's when you start to maybe dip your toe back in, or are you still going to be like, you know what, like, this is, I've been in a healthy place with the Mariners, let me not go down this rabbit hole again? Have you even thought about this at all?
Hasn't been much of an issue.
Years where it came up a little bit. I mean, I guess I would say, so on the one hand, like, I feel like for a long period of this time, a portion of this time, particularly, you know, after the proposal for the Sonics to build an arena in Soto came up and the Mariners were part of the opposition to this because of, you know, purportedly the conflict in terms of event dates in the Soto area, with now, you know, potentially having NBA, NHL, NFL, and MLB and MLS all in the same spot. But, you know, probably more realistically, the fact that they would be more competition in terms of, you know, sponsorship dollars, ticket dollars, the kind of things you talked about earlier in terms of people redistributing that after the Sonics move. Like, at that point, it was very easy for me to root against the Mariners and like be glad that they were continuing to fail. Like, they were stubbing their foot time and time again. Now I feel much less that way. So I feel like I would probably like jump on board as a casual fan, but there definitely wouldn't be any sense of like, man, thank goodness I suffered through all those terrible years for this, even though, you know, I was at some of those games.
Right. People are going to get real mad about that, but I think that's kind of the beauty of this conversation and this podcast series. We have so many different perspectives now, and I've been lucky enough to talk to like a decently wide range of people who are, you know, expressing these different opinions. Like, some people have said, Brittany Belay specifically was like, when they do make the playoffs, I don't know if I'll be able to watch because I will be almost too invested and like it will be like a hazard to my health. And I totally get that as well. Like, there's so many different ways to approach, and it's not even like a real thing, it's totally hypothetical right now, especially when you really look at the state of the team. Like, it's going to be at least a little while until this actually does become maybe a reality, but the fact that people are like almost doomsday prepping for it, I think, is so specifically Mariners. Like, I don't think a lot of other fandoms can really sort of understand the plight. And I'm not trying to like play the victim by any stretch of the imagination. This was a personal choice to decide like to root for the Mariners, but there is so many like little idiosyncrasies to doing this, and like knowing that when it does finally flip the other way, it's going to be such a shift in emotions that a lot of people have not prepared for. Like, it's really, there's no real big point here. I'm just thinking out loud about how fascinating it's going to be to watch this whole thing eventually flip on its head.
Well, I think that often happens with other teams. Like, with the Seahawks, it was, oh my God, can you imagine if we ever won a Super Bowl? It's just sad that with the Mariners, the bar is simply getting to the playoffs.
But isn't it kind of like, oh, like, I feel like for me, they're like becoming like a little, like, it's a child. Like, the drought, if we're talking about the drought as a thing, like, it's 18 years old now, and you're like, okay, you guys have to figure this out. Like, at first it was cute, and now it's like, okay, you got to move off my couch at a certain point, you know?
I mean, at least it feels like they have a direction now. And, you know, when MVP Evan White leads the team to the playoffs in year five of his 9-year contract or something like that, then, you know, it'll be make more sense than when they were just flailing about from year to year for an extended period of
time.
Did
you just make a baseball reference?
I did.
God, pandering. Pandering. You did research on this.
We're actually going to talk about that on this week's Pelton Cast. It's a rare baseball discussion on this week's Pelton Cast.
Okay, so I'm perfectly happy to be a fair weather Mariners fan. I have a couple of thoughts on fandom, because you mentioned that you wouldn't blame somebody. I assume you're talking at somebody in the city of Seattle for not being a Mariners fan, which I fully disagree with. Like, the people who just become fair weather fans of whatever team is interesting, I cannot get behind. It's like, if you are in the city of Seattle and you were born and raised here and paid attention to this team, it is your civic duty to only have this be your team. You can have a secondary team or whatever, but like, you're talking about the worst kind of people who are like, oh, I'll just like the Nationals now. Fuck that. You don't get to like the Nationals.
Wow.
You did not go through it with everybody else like you're talking about. Right? You weren't there trying to get the Nationals to be a team in Washington. You weren't cheering for the Senators before then. So
you weren't with me shooting in the gym.
I could say this to myself also, because it's sort of like a multifaceted thing that I'm going to say here. So give me a second. The other thing is, there are teams where it's like, we've been through this. Like Husky football, we sat in the rain and in the wind and in the cold through a winless season. So when they got good again, we were able to celebrate that wholeheartedly, right? We could feel good about ourselves. And that's really what we're talking about here, is can you sleep at night as a sports fan? And in the 90s, it felt like, you know, we probably became baseball fans because the team was interesting, but they weren't that good, right? And it was like, none of our friends really paid attention to baseball. It was like, I'm talking pre-95. And so
I don't agree with that.
My inclination, other people paid attention to baseball, but it was more like there's this weird kind of niche thing. Like, there were not a lot of people at those games. You know, you'd go to games and there'd be like 8,000-10,000 people there or something.
I'm just saying, we did have other friends that we talked about baseball with.
All right, fine. Okay, but so my natural inclination as as somebody who wants to be on things early on.
Oh, as a hipster, you mean?
As a hipster, is like, I want to be part of something before it's cool. And that's why the Mariners really lost us, was...
Because so many people jumped on the bandwagon in 2001?
Well, really, it was first in 95. So here's the thing. In 95, it's like, we've been watching this fucking team all year, right? And then all of a sudden, August rolls around, and everybody at Valley View Elementary School is a Mariners fan.
I don't think it was in August.
Dog, Mr. T, you weren't framing newspapers in May.
It definitely wasn't until September.
Okay, fine, September. And maybe right around the last day of September. But so it was like, this is our thing. And that's what you were talking about, where it's like, we lost our team because the fan base became too big. And you never want to be a fan of something when the fan base is too big, except for the Seahawks right now, I suppose.
You have complained about the Seahawks bandwagon fans, though. You've been known to do that.
Including
our mom.
Oh, God, Jan. But so it was like, we went through 95. There was this massive fan base, but they kind of winnowed away a little bit, right? There still weren't that many people at the Kingdom every single night. And then, and I personally blame Safeco Field for this, and maybe the 2001 Mariners. It was like, we were on this team.
It's 100% the 2001 Mariners.
They were on our thing. And then in comes, in 2001, this star player who was just handed to the team. Nobody worked for Ichiro. We didn't watch him as a prospect. None of us were paying attention to the Oryx Blue Wave.
Some people could have been paying attention when he came over in spring training that one time in like 98 or whatever it was.
It was like, a star player comes in and everybody loves Ichiro more than any player there is. And I get it. I understand. But I have always hated Ichiro Suzuki.
What?
And it was like, Ichiro represented. I know there's a generation of kids who came up being a fan of Ichiro.
This is bad tech.
And to me, like, Ken Griffey Jr. is my Ichiro or whatever. By the time Ichiro came, this was, I'm going to use a comparison. It was like, I'm trying to think of the perfect band of who it is. I'm like, we'll go with the White Stripes or whatever, right? So it's like, the White Stripes, they were already signed to a major label by the time anybody had heard of them. They weren't like an actual underground thing. But it was like, felt like we were a little bit earlier on, right? Like, I was a little bit earlier on. And then all of a sudden, the fan base becomes massive.
You're not going to go with Macklemore here? Is it Macklemore the right choice here?
I'm not going with Macklemore here.
Okay.
But it was like we were on it earlier than everybody else was, right? And then all of a sudden, when the fan base becomes massive, it's like, well, this isn't a thing I can define myself by. I'm not going to be like, I'm the White Stripes guy. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to be hanging on to this when everybody is a fan of theirs. I'm using a baseball type band. So 2001 rolls around and there's this massive fan base and you look around and you're like, who are these people? Where were these people when I was there? Everybody loves the slap singles hitter that we just started paying attention to in 2001. I'm out.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, that was a lot. And there's a lot to unpack there because some of that I feel like was directly at me. I was one of those kids who was falling in love with baseball because...
And I don't blame you because you were young at that. You were six, right?
Yeah, I would have been six in 2001. That is correct.
Yeah, where the hell were you in 1998 at age three? So, come on.
I think it's a generation issue, and I think there might be a lot of us out there of like 90s Mariners fans who didn't feel that connected after that.
I guess. I think this is also a generational thing that transcends sports because you hear this talked about a lot in music. Like, young musicians now do not bristle at the concept of selling out like they used to. Now it's very much a secure the bag culture, you know what I mean? Where, like, if you have the opportunity to do the thing and have everyone around you also do the thing, you do that. So, like, for me personally, like, this is, again, transcending sports, but, like, I'm the person where if I find a band or a movie or a TV show or whatever that I like, I'm screaming at everyone to watch it or to consume it or listen to it or whatever because I want the fan base to grow. You sound like you're the complete opposite where you find it and you latch onto it and you were the one who was like, nobody else is allowed to like Chris Bosio because I liked Chris Bosio first. And, like, I get it, but I don't align with that, you know what I mean? But I do think it's good because we have an actual disagreement here and you have a very strong take and you're sticking to it.
I want to be clear that I also have a disagreement with him on this day.
On which part? God, you're pro Ichiro too?
I am pro Ichiro. I had an anti-Ichiro moment, but that was a misreading of the stats at the time, and I have repented for my ways.
So wait, Tristan, real quick, would you have preferred if Ichiro was bad? Would that help you like him a little more?
I just don't care. Like, I feel nothing about Ichiro. I've never felt anything at Ichiro. I remember sitting in our grandparents' house right next to where we are right now, seeing him break the record for single season singles or whatever. And hits.
Total hits.
It was hits or whatever. And I was just like, this team is like 40 games under 500. Can we all just be cool here?
This is a really real Bill Simmons about Mike Trout take here.
But I'm just like, can we, like, we're stopping the game because he hit 150 slap singles? You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing interesting about what Ichiro does. He might have made one exciting throw ever.
Wow. I'm literally, like, I did a guffaw. I had to back away from my computer for a second when you said there was nothing impressive about what Ichiro did. He has, like, 4,000 hits combined in his entire life. How many hits do you have in a professional baseball setting?
He doesn't even really have that many in amateur baseball.
Hey, I hit that home run that one time. Don't you forget about it.
Again, to be clear, this is Tristan's take. I, Kevin, have nothing to do with this take. Completely disagree.
Yeah, this might burn the Lookout Landing comment section to the ground, which we could use actually during the off season instead of people arguing about labor issues and contracts and whatnot. Okay, wait, real quick then, while we're on the topic and while Tristan is kind of hot, I guess, how do you feel about Felix Hernandez? Does he have any sort of emotional meaning to you at all, or is it the same thing where you don't like him because he might have got more people into the Mariners?
I mean, Felix had the positive that he never played on a winning team, so it was a little harder for him.
We went to go see Felix pitch. Kevin was like, there's this exciting young player for the Mariners.
I mean, he was already in the major leagues. It's not like it was a big secret at this point. But yeah, I've been reading about him on USS Mariner for years.
It was like a very early start that we went to, and I think he pitched great.
And then we went to Applebee's. Yeah. It was a great time.
That's what you do in the suburbs in 2004?
Yeah, it was later than that.
No, I'm very pro-Felix and have always been very pro-Felix. But it's just like... We were there at the beginning with Felix.
I mean, Felix also feels like so much more of a tragic figure, like the way his career played out, to be so good individually and never have any success at the team level.
But you should blame the Mariners for that.
I 100% blame the Mariners. That's why I'm calling him a tragic figure. Like, he's it's the Mariners were his Achilles heel, or maybe his loyalty to the Mariners for a long period of time. And then it was his stubborn refusal to change at the end of his career. But that's a different subplot.
Yeah, I'm just glad to hear that you don't have, like, some horrible opinion. Like, you're watching Felix's perfect game, and you're like, you know, it's actually more impressive to go six innings with three hits and get a quality start or whatever. Like, at least you have some rational takes about the best Mariners of the last 25 years.
It was just the 2001 Mariners that I do not like the 2001 Mariners. And it's like, the 95 Mariners, there's probably no sports team that I feel more emotional about, excluding nobody. There's no sports team that I feel more emotional about than the 1995 Mariners. But 2001 rolled around, and I was just like, this is not my team. I don't care. I wish ill upon them.
No.
Jesus. Okay, so let me ask you this then. Is there anything that the Mariners could do to change this? Like, what if they have a semi-95 kind of season where maybe they're out of it, and then, you know, they have the magical run and no one believes in them, blah blah blah. If something like that were to happen, and, like, maybe, you know, the group of players really speaks to you or whatever, does that bring you back in at least a little bit, or are you still kind of keeping an arm's distance from the Mariners no matter what?
Oh, I'm much more willing to bandwagon for the Mariners than Kevin says he's willing to. We talked about this a couple weeks ago, and it was like, if they have an exciting conclusion to a season, I'd be very excited about that at this point.
I feel
no ownership over the Mariners.
I feel like he'd be swept up in it, because I remember, like, the 2000 playoffs, and, you know, those games being on, like, the clinching game that they won, and, like, what, a walk-off bunt or infield single? I can't remember what that was against
bunt by Carlos
the White Sox.
Ian, scoring Ricky Henderson.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, like, everybody watching that in the dorm, and that was, like, such an exciting communal moment at that point. So I'd probably jump on, I think so. You know, like, and I'd want certainly my friends who are Mariners fans to be happy, if nothing else.
Sure. The reason why I was kind of thinking about that is because the dream, the real vision here of what the Mariners are doing right now is that they have these young homegrown players all come together and have sort of a, you know, the Griffey A-Rod thing all over again, where it's players that not only are good but became good in the Mariners system and all band together to do the thing. I feel like that could really help revitalize the franchise, because even with the Cano and Cruz years where they got close, there still felt like there was a little bit of, like, oh, these aren't our guys, the way that hopefully we have with Julio Rodriguez, Jared Kelenic, Evan White, Logan Gilbert, and this new wave. I think personally that if those guys can get the Mariners to the playoffs, they will be, like, in the pantheon of Seattle sports. Not in the same way as Griffey or Russell Wilson or whatever, but if it's a homegrown squad that really does it and brings the Mariners back to the playoffs, I think we're going to see a huge sea change, no pun intended, in the way that this town consumes sports again.
Yeah, I mean, I think the city is ready for it. Like, obviously, it's been such a long period of time. And even though, you know, it would probably be easier if it were a period where it was more of a fallow period for the rest of Seattle sports teams, where, you know, the Sounders weren't winning MLS Cups and the Seahawks weren't continuing to play as well as they were. It might be a little easier for everybody to latch on. But, you know, for sure, I mean, this city also is, and this is kind of the subtext, I think, of what Tristan was saying about the 2001 team and, you know, the 95 team as well. This has always been a front-running town, and whenever a team starts playing well, the bandwagon will fill up.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt that it will happen. I think I'm just curious to see what the like, connection feels like, you know, like, if it's the sort of surface level. Like, I feel like the 2013 Seahawks had there was a large group of people who were, like, only really paying attention on Sunday, and then they wouldn't think about the Seahawks until next Sunday, you know? I think if there is a world where, like, five or six homegrown Mariners become the face of the next playoff team, I think that will actually help people sort of dive back in and not just do the, like, check the box score, oh, they won, yay, let me buy a hat and let me go to, like, one game a month or whatever. I think it's going to be, like, we're all in this for real again this time. And this is obviously me being very wishful, because I care so deeply about the Mariners, but that, I think, to me would be the ideal way that this whole down period actually fixes itself.
I mean, I think the other thing about it that'll make it easy is, like, the experience of going to a Mariners game is still a good experience, at least during the summer when it's warm. Like, that's one thing that's different than, you know, the Kingdom was amazing when there were 50,000 people there and the noise that you could generate, the home field advantage, like, during the 95 run and the playoffs. But it was a terrible place to watch a ball game, which is another thing Tristan and I disagree about. He's nostalgic about the Kingdom, and you know, I will never forget the experience of it's being like it's like a movie theater when you walk out during the daytime and you have to blink to readjust to the sunlight because you've been in this concrete cellar for
and you
hours.
Loved it.
I mean, I am nostalgic for it. I don't get me wrong, but I'm also rational enough to understand that, like, hey, being able to sit outdoors on a 75-degree day in Seattle and eat this quality
those
food
20 games under 500.
Eat this quality. Well, that's what I'm saying, though. If there was actually a good team playing there and you had local craft beer and the, like, Little Woody's and all these, and Din Tai Fung and all these, well, Din Tai Fung's not local, but these quality food outlets and not the King Dog, like, that would be that would be a pretty amazing combination if you could actually bring that back again.
Totally. Tristan, it feels like you have a very weird relationship with success. Like, on the one hand, you're, like, taking every chance you get to be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's not as fun when the Mariners are 20 game under. But at the same time, the best team in American League history is the one that made you start to hate the Mariners. I'm very confused by this.
It's just that team. It was like that. I mean, I was 16 years old, right? It was, like, that team at that particular time. And it was, like, for whatever reason, it's, like, when your friend gets cool, you know what I mean? Like you have a friend and then they start taking a weightlifting class and all of a sudden they're popular or whatever, but you're not popular with them. And you're like, okay, I'm still here and I'm still the same, but like you're over there with the cool kids.
It's kind of like, weirdly specific.
Yeah, I was going to say you could have just stopped after I was 16. It all made a lot more sense after that.
I will say, though, I is not as strongly as Tristan. I do feel like I had a somewhat similar reaction. And I think there was an element of jealousy, especially, like, you know, by that point, I guess I wasn't yet working for the Sonics, was, like, very specifically righty about them and was like, you know, it'd be nice to have some of this attention on the Sonics and not all of it on the Mariners.
Yeah, and then I feel like, again, I keep bringing it back to the Seahawks, but it is, I think, a nice little comparison. Like, that is totally what's happening right now, I think, where that is the only thing that's happening. Like, all of the attention. I mean, the Sounders, you know, they're great. They won the championship, but we all know that the Sounders will never be as big as the Seahawks are. And, like, I feel like that is still sort of the worry, too, where the Mariners will be sort of relegated to second-class citizen just because basically an entire generation kind of forgot what it's like to have them be good. Do you know what I mean?
But I think they also show how quickly that can turn around because, you know, again, for the 90s, they were just, you know, basically dead in the early 2000s. And as much as even more so than the Super Bowl, I think it was going to the Super Bowl in 2005-06, that run that kind of filled up the bandwagon. That was all of a sudden when, you know, as Tristan mentioned earlier, kind of like all the people I knew from high school who didn't care about the Seahawks, even when they made the playoffs my senior year of high school for the first time under Holmgren, you know, all of a sudden they started like obsessively caring about the Seahawks. And it's like, huh, that's an interesting change. I wasn't quite as upset about it as you were, but it was definitely something I noticed.
Tristan, do you have anything to say about the 05 Seahawks? Do you also hate Sean Alexander?
Well, that's an entirely different podcast
that's not
altogether.
Fair.
we have no
I've been pro every Seahawks team. Well, not pro every Seahawks team, but I've never felt about the Seahawks.
1992 Seahawks. Well done.
In that same way.
Okay, so for you, like, it doesn't matter if the Seahawks are good or bad. You're in for the long haul. But with the Mariners, it seems like the badness is almost becoming, like, another reason to shit on them, for lack of a better term.
It was like a lack of interest that came from, honestly, their success in the early 2000s, like I mentioned, is what kind of got me out. If they would have just been bad that whole time, I probably would have been fine being a fan, where if you went to Safeco Field or whatever and it was just about the experience the whole time, probably would have just been fine with that. Would have been fine with the Mariners.
But I think it's a sport level thing. Like, when the Seahawks were struggling a little bit in like that end of the Mike Holmgren era, Jim Mora year, even early Pete Carroll, like, it wasn't like I stopped paying attention to the NFL. It was just all my attention went over to fantasy football in the league as a whole rather than the Seahawks specifically.
Every Sunday, if the Seahawks are not playing at home and I'm at the game, I will sit and watch NFL Red Zone from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Where it's like I will watch every single national football game that I possibly can, basically. And like baseball, I'm like, some guy won the MVP. Like, I know who Mike Trout is, but, like, have I ever seen Alex Bregman maybe in that game against the Dodgers, that game seven against the Dodgers? It was like, I couldn't name who, like, the stars in baseball are.
Yeah, you might have heard Alex Bregman with the bat on the trash can, but he is kind of forgettable with his face.
That's good. We haven't had nearly enough Astros jokes in this podcast.
But the other thing about the Astros, like, the Astros are, like, a very notable national team, right? And they were terrible a few years ago. It's like, that can change instantly. If the Mariners have one or two very good seasons, this will be a baseball town.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I also think that, like I said, the whole thing about the generational, like, it's going to take a lot, I think, for people who did the cycle of I like them to I'm done. Like, I think that is the toughest wall to break. Because if you're, like, halfway out, it's much easier to get back in. But the people who are going to have to, like, put aside their pride almost and be like, you know what, I was screaming on multiple podcasts about how much I hate the Mariners, but now that they're good again, I have to, like, swallow my pride and get back in. I think that's going to be a very interesting thing to monitor. And I don't know, like, there's no way to, like, quantify that feeling, or, like, you know, I'm not going to be walking around with a clipboard being like, you said in 2015 that you never follow the Mariners. Like, I don't care about that, but I am just curious to see how the whole thing will play out.
As Tristan pointed out, I mean, really what we're doing here is we're defining our personalities through the culture and the sports teams that we like and how we talk about them. And so, yeah, if you've defined yourself as being against the Mariners for a long period of time, that is probably harder change than if you just define yourself as being indifferent to them.
Right, yeah. And there's also a conversation to be had here. We're not going to do it, but it's like the whole conversation of, like, why do you have to have that as part of your identity? And, like, why does it have to be so hardcore? Like, there's ways to care about sports that aren't necessarily tied up in wins and losses. I've seen this with my dad a little bit, to just tell a personal story. My dad went to USC and is a huge USC football fan, so mid-2000s, obviously, he was living and dying with every game because they could win the national championship. But now I've seen, as the program kind of slips into just mediocrity, like, he's a lot more healthy with his approach to it, which I think is great, and I'm really proud of him for it, honestly. But seeing him sort of go from, like, this is everything to me, like, every Saturday is USC football, to now being a little more like, you know what, I don't care. Like, obviously I want them to win, but there's other things that are more important. That to me has also helped a lot, just knowing that, like, sports doesn't have to be the, like, binary thing of, like, win, I'm happy, loss, I'm sad. You know what I mean? I think that's important for everyone
that
to
is
remember.
Spoken like a true Mariners fan.
Well, it's all we have. I believe that too. I don't know what else to say.
Because my perspective on this is, like, if the only reason you're following sports is for the wins and losses, you're basically just playing the emotional lottery. Like, you got to be able to get something else out of it. And maybe it takes a long period of time. Because, like, when I think back on the 90s Mariners, like, obviously the 95 run stands out. But it's also just, like, watching random games and Ron Fairley, the late Ron Fairley commentating. We talked about this when he passed away. Like, also all the, obviously, Niehaus. Like, all these things that are memories that have nothing to do with whether a game was actually a win or a loss. It was just kind of the process of being a fan.
Sure, yeah. And there's a lot of, like, accidental metaphors in there too. Like, one of my most memorable Safeco Field events was the summer after I graduated high school. My friend and I went to a game, and we may or may not have been sneaking in alcohol and Gatorade bottles, and the security found us, and they kicked us out, as they obviously were in the right to do. We were 17 or 18, whatever, breaking the law. But then the Mariners won that game on a walk-off, and we had to listen to it in the radio coming home. And it's like, even when we were in the stadium for what could have been a good thing, we missed out on it. And that seems like, I come back to that thought all the time of, like, that was the beginning of the universe trying to tell me that the Mariners have this weird way of fucking with you.
I gotta say, and it's nothing personal, but the ushers at Safeco, now T-Mobile, being as strict as they are, is probably, like, a very tiny part of being not as much a Mariners fan. Like, a very small part. No. Like, at the Kingdom, no one cared.
We are in agreement on that. I think all teenagers should be allowed to drink in T-Mobile Park whenever they want.
Or at least, like, at Husky Stadium, where they just take your beer away, but they let you stay in the game.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think that's a logical thing to land on here. Okay, so let me end with this now. We're getting close to the end of our run here. You guys are known around the podcast world maybe for Mariner hot takes. It was a staple of the Pelton cast maybe still is to a certain extent. But I was wondering, the listeners of your show are probably screaming at us right now to give us a Mariner hot take. Tristan has kind of accidentally done this a couple times, saying that Ichiro was actually bad and that winning sucks. But I'm wondering maybe if you have a more modern version of that, any real hard opinions on the 2019 team or the state of the affairs going forward, any uniform related takes. That's one thing that I'm actually very passionate about. It's time for new jerseys. But I'm wondering, and if the answer is no, that's fine, but I'm wondering if you have anything you want to get off your chest before we leave. Any one final take. The soapbox is yours if you wish to have it.
All right, my hot take is that it's time for T-Mobile Park to modernize the music they play in the stadium, because it's still the same stuff they played in 1995. And, like, guys, 25 years has passed here. Generationally, you are way too far behind. You've got to cater to this young group of fans that has not ever seen any success. So let's bring that forward, like, three decades here. Can we do that? Like, a little less hit the road, Jack, and that sort of thing, huh?
Okay, I can get behind that. Tristan wants to hear some Billie Eilish at every Mariners game he's at. That's the vision for the 2020s.
You actually want to hear Illuminati Hotties at every Mariners game, I think.
Even better.
Are you implying that I'm anti-Billie Eilish?
No, I'm just saying that Billie Eilish is too mainstream.
No, was he... I feel like there's a misconception of my perspective about mainstream music or whatever. I'm more than happy with it. My favorite artist of all time is Kanye West. So,
if you haven't already been canceled now,
this is not a contrarian take. Sorry, my favorite artist of all time is Frank Ocean.
There we go.
But I'm gonna. The Mariners this offseason and last offseason are finally building the right way. It has taken them two decades to figure out the way that you build a long-term winning baseball team is not by going out there and signing star players who are washed up away from other teams on their second, on their third contracts, trying to get lucky with veteran pitchers. The way that you build a long-term winning team is with the youth. You go all in on the youth. Sometimes you have to be bad for a few years to do it, but guess what, Mariners? Even when you were paying $100 million in salary, the team still didn't make the playoffs, so you might as well bottom out, and that's what the Mariners need to do this season. Get young and win at losing. Those players that you mentioned earlier, whose names I definitely know, those are the players who are going to be leading this Mariners team, not to their next playoff appearance. No. To the World fucking Series! Beautiful. In 2 years, we are going to be here saying we were on the ground floor this very moment of the world champion Seattle Mariners.
My favorite part of that take was where you implied that $100 million was a large payroll.
Or when I asked you who the Mariners GM was beforehand.
How could you forget Trader Jerry?
And, like, Jack Sorensic is going to make this team
no,
good.
Oh, no.
Wow. Okay. Well, we've covered, I think, every possible acre of land here. We got the good opinions, some, I would say, extremely bad opinions, but we got them all out there. And that's really the point of this podcast series, to give people a platform to vent about what the Mariners have done to them. And I think we've seen that come out in full force today. So I want to thank my guests. Thank you, Kevin Pelton and Tristan Caracino. You guys were excellent. Do you have anything to plug? Obviously, you have your own podcast. You can talk about that. You can talk about any other things you want to draw your attention to. Plug away.
Send all complaints to Kevin Pelton. He's the one who made all those hot takes. That's at @KPelton on Twitter. Just really anti-Ichiro. Just don't even know what's going on with that guy.
And I would say, if you are strictly a Mariners fan, definitely do not listen to the Fabulous podcast, because we do not talk the Mariners that often, sadly. Just the hot takes version that you heard a taste of with Tristan. But if you're interested in other Seattle sports and searches for Seattle's best food, then give us a listen.
Yeah, it's a great time. This was a wonderful time as well, despite Tristan existing only through Mariners hot takes, which I think makes sense now that I'm really thinking through it. Like, when all you do is on your podcast is think about the Mariners in extremes, it'll definitely come out even on baseball podcasts. So we appreciate that. We need someone to sort of balance out Kevin and I's mellowness. So thank you, Tristan. Thank you, Kevin, for just
are these takes a lot hotter than other people were giving on their why we're a Mariners fan?
What was that?
Are these takes a lot hotter?
I don't think anyone else was coming out against Ichiro.
No, nobody was coming out against Ichiro. I'm trying to think of what the hottest take was that we've had. I mean, it's been more therapeutic than anger, I think, has been the theme that you had was a lot more of like being upset with the team, whereas everyone else has been sort of grappling with themselves rather than the organization as a whole.
I guess that says something about us that we never put any blame internally. It was all external.
Yeah, and hey, there's no wrong way to do this. I mean, growth will, it's not always linear, but we'll get there eventually. So listen back to this when it comes out and maybe try to use that as a guiding tool in sports fandom moving forward.
See you in the World Series.
Yes, the 2025 World Series. You want to put a year on it? Be even bolder?
Oh, earlier. 2023, at least.
All right, heard it here first. Your 2023 World Series champions were born on this day. Much like how I saved the franchise from going under just by entering the world, we saved the playoff drought by speaking it out of existence, basically.
You're welcome, Mariners fans.
You're welcome. All right. Well, I am Matthew Robertson at mroberson22 on Twitter. Read Lookout Landing. Follow Lookout Landing. Follow all of us. Kevin is at kpelton. Tristan is at Tristan Carasino. And the fabulous Pelton Cast is wherever you get podcasts. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. And until next time, bye.